grab a front row seat to the Untold Stories as we talk about how to live life on your terms. You're officially part of the inner circle. Welcome to Courtside with Courtney. And don't worry, I comped your ticket. Welcome back to another episode of Courtside with Courtney. Today, we have my good friend, Dr. Brooke Stubbs. I just said before this, are we supposed to call you Dr. Brooke or
all
do we
the
just
time.
Go? Because obviously, I've never referred to her as that, but you are a doctor and that takes a lot of schooling and you deserve your title.
I very rarely have anybody, I never correct anybody if they don't refer to me as doctor. You know this, Courtney. I do show up in places with like my scrubs that have MD on it if I have to do a little flexing.
Absolutely. Because you know what?
I don't want people, I'm like pretty blonde and I say like a lot. I want people to know I mean business.
Hell yeah,
I'm not
we
to
do.
Be messed with.
We need to roll into the principal's office. We are wearing the scrubs,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You just ride with me and we'll make sure you look good.
Absolutely. Let's talk about how we met first, because one of my like big things on the podcast, if you're new to listening to, is that obviously, there will be a point in time when we open up the doors and we're talking to people who, you know, I haven't had a close relationship with in the past, et cetera. But in the beginning of this, and really for what I guess we're sort of calling like season one, I've really been talking to people who I'm close with in real life, who like I really respect and feel like add a lot of value to me in my life, which is the whole like inner circle thing.
I love it.
And I feel like it's cool to be able to bring that to other people as well, rather than just picking like a random doctor. It's like way cooler if it's, you know, someone that
right.
I go to for like conversations and advice. And like, we talk about eating and diet, especially a lot, like with my dad, and you know, we can get into that in a minute, but you're in my inner circle, but let's tell everybody how we met.
So the first time I actually remember, now your name circulated in my world for a long time before we actually met. And I think the first time I actually, now you might have an earlier memory, but the first time I actually introduced myself to you was on the soccer field. Our daughters playing soccer together.
Same.
I was like, hey, I know you and you know this person and da 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 da. And then it was a slow build. We weren't like fast friends right away.
No, I feel like I always like really liked you right when we met. We just didn't have that much time to talk and like spend time together.
Right.
And I think one thing about me, and I feel like you have become this way over time as well from our conversations, is I'm at a place in my life now at 36, I'm almost 37. I don't know if I'll be 37 by the time this airs actually, but I'm at a place where it's now a lot harder to get in my inner circle than it ever has been. And that's not just like, I will be kind to everyone. I will be friendly. I love to meet people, but at the end of the day, because I am like naturally extroverted person, at the end of the day, I don't let that many people that close to me. And I think that's probably at this point only something that the people that are close to me know.
Well, I picked up on that very early in our friendship and you have to do that. Your platform requires you to do that. I think it's very smart and it's, you know, you have to protect your energy and have boundaries. I remember just not too long ago, I was having some issues with a lot of people I had let into my life pretty easily. And I was like, Courtney, how do you do it? How do you A, keep them from getting so close to you? Because I think I'm more of a, I don't know, just more of an open, like, yes, everybody, I want everybody to like me. I'm getting over that. Seriously, I don't
I
care
used to be that way too, though. Anymore. Like we're naturally right. open. Like we naturally share. And I mean, you have a platform too.
Right.
As well, right? And I think that on any scale, when you have a platform, it's typically because you like to share, you know?
Right.
And I think, and obviously being a doctor, you like to help people and you like to right. share. And so naturally, if your inclination is to share, sometimes then life happens. And I think it's one of those things where when people prove to you time and time again, either maybe they don't have the best intentions, they want something that there's ulterior motives, or they present to be one way and then aren't all of a sudden, whatever it is, right? Like it over time, you learn that not everything is as it appears and it, your energy is absolutely worth protecting. You're also very intuitive. So I feel like you always know, but our issue, both of our issues mm-hmm. is because we're genuinely like kind and good-hearted, we like assume the best of others a lot of times.
Right. Which, I see the potential that something yes. could be before I really take note of how they're acting towards me.
Yes.
And I am very forgiving in that sense, which is fine to some degree, but then that can create a toxic pattern. And I think what I see in the people that end up giving me my intuition kind of a shake to say, like, I don't know if you really want this person around you, is if they don't know themselves well. And I think that that is probably similar to people in, I've watched people do that. And when I was younger and didn't know myself as well, I could sense that people were kind of, you know, keeping their distance. And I think that for me now, I see that, I appreciate that. And you don't want people in your life that can just be easily influenced by anything, right? You want people in your life who know who they are and they have good values and that your values are similar. Like, that's another reason why sometimes people just don't jive, because you don't want to be judgmental. Everybody has their journey, but also you create an environment that really works and is cultivated for what you believe and what you're, you know, what you honor in your life.
And I think too, when you're a woman and a wife, in your case, a mom in both our cases, whether you're giving time to a relationship, which like we both do, parenthood, which we both do, careers, which we both do, your own fitness and health and wellness, which we both do, there's really only so much time left. And so to a degree, even if you wanted to be, you know, good friends with XYZ amount of people, there's really not enough time to be a good friend to that many people. And so I also think like, what can I fit on my plate as well, right? Which is just like hard for me sometimes to even see like my best friend. So I probably don't have extra time for the people for the five layers out, you know? Yeah.
And I think the value that I find in my closest friends is that they know that about me. They know how focused I am, especially about my career. Of course, my kids are, you know, a top priority, but they don't pressure me.
Yes.
They don't pressure me to take my time. My best girlfriends in the whole wide world, I don't ever see. I live in Austin, Texas. They live in my hometown of Lexington, Kentucky. I will fly home for a family week and my girlfriends will not pressure me to see them. They know I am there. They love me. They don't have to take it from me.
Totally.
And I think that that's a really strong indication of a good friendship.
The lack of almost like expectation and pressure, because I do think that there are friendships, especially when you're younger, where people are like, well, you haven't like called me and you never call me and I never see you. And like you hang out with other people all the time. And it's like, I think that, and Allie and I actually just had this conversation the other day, and Ava and I did as well. I need to get Ava on the podcast soon. But Ava and I did as well. And it was a conversation surrounding like, look, at the end of the day, like your people show up for you and they have an understanding of the time you have. Maybe 1 week I'm calling you 3 times a day, and maybe 1 week I barely remember to eat lunch today. And I'm like doing my best, but you know that if I love you, you know, and it's not a reflection of how I feel about you.
Right.
So let's talk about friendship buckets, because this is something I talk about in dating a lot as well.
Okay.
I think that at the end of the day, you should put people essentially in buckets. Now, I have defined this theory a lot more clearly with dating, but I do think for friendship, there are people who you just don't want to be friends with, don't vibe with, don't click with. And you can even see this on like a kid level. Like our girls are friends too, which is amazing. And it was like a slower burn for them as well, actually.
Oh, it totally was.
And now they like love each other and it's really, really cool to see. But I think like at the end of the day, there are people.
By the way, Sloan was so cute. She came home. What day was Kinsley's birthday?
The 23rd.
Okay. So she came home that day and she goes, hey mom, today was Kinsley's birthday. Not her actual party, but her birthday was today.
And that's so cute.
You're so cute.
You're like, good to know.
She's six. Like she's a lot less emotionally mature than Kinsley, but oh God, it's so precious. She was Sloane so excited for her. Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. I totally interrupted.
No, you're good. You're good. I was just saying, I think that there are people, and you can even see this, like just humans in general, and you can see this in kids is where I was going with it, where like, you just don't really get along. Maybe you don't connect. Maybe you don't like them. Maybe you don't vibe. Maybe you have complete like pillar misalignment, or maybe you just like don't have anything in common, and they could be a great person. It has nothing to do right with like someone's character per se, although it could, I suppose.
Yeah.
So there's people you just like, you don't really fuck with. Like they just don't, they aren't your people.
It's not part of your world.
That's okay. Then there's other people that are friends, sort of more like acquaintances.
100%.
Because either like bandwidth, B, pillar misalignment, maybe like you really like them, maybe you like, you know, work out at the same place as them or whatever. And like you get along and you talk, but there's something about them that, you know, just wouldn't be like your best friends, like your close friends. And so that's like arm distance friends. And then there's friends that are like your people. Those are like your ride or die people. You genuinely like can tell anything to, trust. And those friendships even look differently because, like you said, that you could see somebody every day or you could see them once a year or not. And you could still have like that really tight knit friendship. There are also friends that you could have been friends with for a long time, or friends that you, you know, have once been close to and then you've grown apart from. And sometimes, you know, because of, you know, whether it's like their actions or you don't have time or your interests are different now, you're in two totally different places in life, like whatever it is, I think that the buckets can flex a little bit, but it's almost important to identify at some point what bucket someone's in.
I think so too. And I think that when you said the bucket where they're like your ride or die, I think I would add like a halfway bucket there. Where,
between
like
two and three.
Yeah, they're acquaintances, but more than acquaintances. And then there's like the real true ride or die that you see every day. And then there's like the old school ride or die, and you might not really affiliate with them in your daily life anymore.
Yeah, but like, you know, if you needed them, you know, you would bail them out of jail if they needed you, but like you don't talk to them on a regular basis.
Right. And I think just as important as identifying in your mind what those friends are to you is communicating, and maybe not so straightforward, but, you know, subtle things, but communicating the expectations for that friendship.
Yes. And I think too, the between bucket thing is really important. It's almost like a shade dibs 2.5.
Which is my favorite, by the way.
Which is your favorite shade. But I think the 2.5 too, because maybe your intentionality is like, I could see this being a bucket three friendship. Just need to like invest more time and have that person invest more time and like show up in that way.
And,
but like
or
it
be
could
slow
go there.
And feel them out, you know, and not put too much pressure on the situation.
Totally.
Kind of like dating.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is in a lot of ways, but right. I think, you know, not everybody's for you and that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like an interesting conversation to have about adult friendships because I feel like it still takes navigating,
hard.
You know? Yeah.
And it's okay to bring somebody in and then realize it's not working out and putting distance between you and that person. I think that's I don't always do it so intentionally. I am, like you say, we both are very, very busy. But if you find a red flag, don't ignore it. You know, you can sit on it, but like put it in the back of your mind, especially if I've been through some toxic situations with friends. Don't care to talk about it here because I still love them. And it's always like on my brain that I hope they are well. But, you know, you can back away from friendships that aren't no longer working for you, no matter how the expectations start.
Yes. I like to call it a slow back away.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it requires a conversation and sometimes it doesn't. Like sometimes it's just saying no more often.
I think if there's a problem, people know what's happened. You don't always have to say, this is why I'm backing away.
100%. I also think too, like women in general, you can tell when someone genuinely supports you and wants the best for you versus when they don't.
Oh my God, 100%. I could die on this hill right now.
Oh yeah.
I like you said, when you have a platform, you know it even more because also where I am in my platform versus where you are, everybody's kind of, we're all trying to keep going and trying to get to where our ultimate goal is or, you know, so we're on the climb. And you see other people on the climb with you and some are very supportive and some are a little more quiet and they want you to support them, but they're not reciprocating that support. And I don't know. I'm all about bringing people up together with me, but
that's because you're genuinely confident and you understand something that I think is really important to understand, which is that just because someone else is successful, just because someone else is beautiful, just because someone else is kind, just because someone else has a dream relationship does not mean that you don't or that you can't. I think there's like this weird competition between women and it's really like women versus women, which I think sucks and is sad in so many ways. But like my mom, we said this on the podcast with her. There's always going to be someone more beautiful than you. Always going to be someone that you're more beautiful than. There's always going to be someone more successful. Always someone that you are more successful than.
Like, I swear to God, I told this to my husband when we were dating because he had this really beautiful ex-girlfriend. And I think somebody asked me in front of him if it aggravated me. And I was like, no, first of all, it's a compliment that he would, you know, be attracted to her and to me. And there's always going to be somebody richer, more beautiful, smarter.
Totally.
That doesn't mean that I am not also those things. And
totally. And you're also that for someone else as well, right? But like,
yeah,
when you come from the like manifestation positivity, like the standpoint that we both come from, it's abundance. And there is enough, you know, wealth, love, like positivity, success, whatever to go around. It takes nothing away from you. I actually do something that I think, I don't know if I've ever actually shared or pointed out, but I actually intentionally compliment beautiful women consistently and women in general, because I find that a lot of people don't compliment beautiful women.
Well, that's true.
Because they think A, you either get it a lot, or B, you're conceited and you already know, or they feel insecure so they actually actively don't lift you up. Right. Whereas like, I will always be like, wow, you're really beautiful, or I love your hair. Or
this is also one thing about you that if people ask me like, oh, how is she? Like, how, like, what kind of person is she?
I'm
like,
the worst.
That girl is, of all of my friends, of all the people I know, other than like maybe my dad, the most positive person ever. We went on a trip together and I was parenting Sloan in a way that, you know, I typically parent, which after that trip, I really changed. I'm actively trying to be more positive and point out the positive things she's doing. There's a way to parent where you tell them when they've done wrong, and there's a way to parent when you are positive about the things they've done right. And seeing you parent, Kinsley, is incredible. It actually changed the way I wanted to treat my own child.
Thank you. That means a lot.
But that's not just, I mean, parenting, that like really shows your values. It really shows like patience, your heart. Love. Yes.
We all get impatient, you know, from time to time.
For sure. But the fact that that's how you parent, I mean, that's who you are through and through. Positive. Yeah.
I really appreciate that. That means a lot. I think that's like one thing that's interesting about living your life out publicly. And I'm sure that you feel this as well. But people come and they make assumptions, and 99.9% of the time, they're not true. It's one of those things where actually like I just told you this a minute ago. I've definitely sort of come to a new place lately where it's, you know, as much as I want to get to share Kinsley more because I adore her and I'm her mom and I think she's the coolest, funniest, smartest, you know, most beautiful like little girl, like Sloan, you know, we love them so much, right? Yeah. And it's like, I would love to be able to share that, but like my intuition right now and my gut is like, most of the time, I'll share, you know, the back of her head or like the side occasionally. I'm kind of done putting her out there because it like freaks me out. Like people will make shit up about me and talk shit about me like all you want. Like if that's how you spend your free time.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer that, and we'll get into like, I really want to get into obviously like all the doctoring. I want to talk like plastic surgery. I want to talk about weight loss. I want to talk about diet. I want to talk about all the things. In general, speaking of health, I think negativity is a cancer. And I think that at the end of the day, if you want to spend your time, your free time and your energy shitting on someone else, making things up about them, messaging their boyfriend, their friends, their coworkers, like you're weird.
It's a reflection of you, not of them.
It's not and just know that, like it is never going to be a reflection of me. The things that someone comes and tries to say, like all it's going to do is, you know, take 4 seconds of my time to block you. So I guess like if that's how you want to spend your time, by all means, but it's just, it's unhealthy for you because just know that at the end of the day, like you're not affecting me. Like,
right.
I know who I am.
Yeah.
It's unhealthy for you. So I would encourage you, if you're someone that acts that way, whether it's like talking shit about someone's parenting or, which is by the way, not the only reason I don't want to show Kinsley. I just feel like there's a lot of like creeps and weirdos on the internet. And I don't like, older she gets, like the thought of that, like makes my skin crawl. Uh-huh. I know you understand. And at the end of the day, like I don't, as a parent, like your instinct is like protect.
Yes. The biggest lesson that I have learned that has radically changed my whole life in recent years is that you can be, I'll be in a room and say I'm giving a speech to 1,000 people. There are going to be 1,000 different views or opinions of who I am. And there's only one accurate truth, and that's my own. And every view of me is only driven by each person's perception.
That's so good.
They are viewing me through their own lens.
That's so good.
And
their own experiences and their own mm-hmm. positive things or negative things or traumas right. and whatever else.
And they can only see in you what they've been able to see within themselves.
Mm.
So if you see somebody beautiful on the street, that's the beauty within you radiating. If you are judging every single person on the street, it's because you're in judgment of yourself.
It's so true. It's always like, it's the old thing, like when you point one finger at someone else, you have three pointing back at yourself. And it's right. so true, because every time when someone comes at me, especially about specific things, like when, even when I was going through my divorce, right? People, oh, I can't believe that you would get divorced and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, they're miserable and trapped mm-hmm. in a loveless marriage. And they're like pissed at me that I'm taking an actionable step. Or whether it's like, someone is really upset. Like, you're so beautiful. Like, every single time I see you, I'm always like taken aback because you're so beautiful. It's one of those things. If that pisses someone off, like, it's kind of on you. It's because you don't feel beautiful. It's not because you're doing something, you know? Right. And I feel like as women too, that's like a whole conversation, because a lot of people open up though, she's a lot. And I've talked about this before in episodes, and it's kind of like, is she a lot? Or is it just, is that confidence in deeply rooted, like genuine sense of self, is that like triggering something in you because you don't know who you are?
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
The problem is the people not being consciously aware of
it. Totally.
And living in that pain and continuing to perpetuate that. So yes, it does trigger you. Can people be more conscious of their triggers and so that they present a better version of themselves to the world? I wish people would.
And they could actually work on those things, right? Like, I think that as someone who's trying to live more consciously, like, you could look inward. If something really annoys you about someone, ask yourself, why does that really annoy you?
Recently, a friend reached out, and she's always been kind and genuinely wanted good things for me. Said something about me posting things in the car. And one of her comments was like, it's really selfish. And I was all of a sudden like viscerally had a reaction to that. And instead of saying that was a really mean thing for you to say, I said, okay, I'm taken aback by the comment. I'm going to look inward. I'm going to figure out why that affected me so much.
You're really good at doing this. And you do this in real time. I've noticed this.
Yeah.
You do take inventory as you go.
I do. I don't speak until I've figured it out. I think I used to do that and it got me into trouble. And so now I really filter. I get through that prefrontal cortex before. I'm not a reactor anymore.
What was the conclusion on that? I'm curious.
The conclusion was that it's something that somebody else has pointed out to me before, that people who love me have been saying this, and I should heed their advice. And so that is what it is. And so I'm going to not do any more posts while I'm driving, as much as I hate it.
Yeah.
But I think if people who love me are concerned, and it certainly is not like something that I can really defend, then what is it to me to give it up?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think, again, that's like good growth in anything, because there will be a lot of times when something happens and you analyze it and you're like, okay, like, this one's not on me. This is like they're, you know, projecting something or whatever, right, versus being like, okay, I could probably work on that. The other day, someone said to me, but and I was like, you know what?
You have to know yourself enough to know the difference.
Yes, 100%.
To know the difference when it's your energy and when it's somebody else's energy being projected onto you.
Totally. Like, I had a conversation recently too, where like there was something I realized, like, oh, I need to be like a little bit more flexible about things like that. Okay. Like, I can be more flexible about things like that. You're right. So I think that it's important to have enough self-awareness to recognize, like, this is something I'll edit versus like, this is actually not on me.
Right.
And this is a reflection of how you feel about yourself.
I know.
I think as a whole, when it comes to women in society and everything like that, and there's a bit of a double-edged sword. I want to talk about plastic surgery because there's a bit of a double-edged sword here, which is in, especially in my world, a lot of it is share, tell us, what have you done? And then you tell people and you're like, cool, I had my boobs done. I have filler in my lips. I got temple filler.
I'm really cautious when people ask me about my plastic surgery. Am I picking up a vibe where they are genuinely interested for themselves and because they are happy for me? Or am I picking up the vibe of judgment? And then I really don't enter that conversation. And so
protect your energy again, because you don't, I think at the end of the day, we all need to understand, like, you don't owe anyone anything. I don't owe you anything. I don't owe like telling you something. If I choose to share something, that's because I'm comfortable and I want to, and I trust you. And like you said, you recognize someone's coming from a good place. Like, we've had all these conversations, but there are people that put out that vibe of like they are judging you, and it is a lot less inviting to share that information.
Right. Because you're not going to be met with a genuine exchange. Mm-hmm. You're just not. And it starts to kind of eat away at you if you're like, everybody's judging me. Why do you want to have that conversation? You don't have to. You feel good
about
it.
And I think from after obviously being friends with you and talking with you, I also feel like it, when it comes from like a good place in the sense of, I feel like this is for me. I'm not doing this because I care about how you feel or you feel. And I've done, you know, work, like I'm good with myself and my inner self and all these things. And if this like is what I want to do, then I'm going to do it.
Right.
You know,
I'll tell you, I've had my breasts lifted and augmented since having babies. And that was an incredible decision for me.
Same. I used to literally like, I feel like I couldn't even wear certain outfits and certain dresses because they were like saggy, or the bra was like, I could never, you know, it's major.
I bent down one time and my boob literally fell out of my bra. And I was like, it's motherhood. Time. It's time.
Motherhood.
We're not waiting any longer.
Someone told me one time, I was in Nordstrom and I was pregnant, and they said, when you're done breastfeeding, and I breastfed Ken's for like 8 months, I think it was. When you're done breastfeeding, your boobs will be like socks. And I was like, I don't understand. Like, I didn't understand. I was like, I don't get it. I get it now.
So true. When pancake socks.
Yep. If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. So they're not pancakes or socks anymore. And I'm glad.
Yep.
From the time I was very young, I wanted a nose job. And I look back on those pictures when I was young and I had this cute little petite nose. Why did I ever want a nose job then? But as I aged and after pregnancy, my nose changed and it grew in a way that I didn't like and didn't really feel like it was me, which is a bizarre thing to say. So I was 38 years old when I decided, or maybe I was 36. Anyway, I was like, I've spent a long time with this nose. I can accept if it doesn't look exactly how I want it to look when it's over, because it's the center of my face. I literally rationalized, like, I could hate my nose or love it after this. And I'm happy to, I trust my surgeon. I got a surgeon that I really trust.
The risk you're willing to take.
Yeah. And I could not be happier with that decision. I feel more myself. I feel like I accepted the change that I wanted to see for myself. I feel like I'm
it looks amazing. And by the way, I would have never known. Everything that you, I feel like, have is so natural.
Thank you.
Looking like it really does look exactly like I would have never known had you not told me.
Well, Marcelo Antunes to me.
I Aaron always like
Smith in my eye.
Oh, I didn't know you had your eyes in, I don't think.
Yeah, I had a blepharoplasty too.
That's very in right now.
Yeah.
I have always thought about getting a nose job. Two things.
We're not going to let you, right?
Well, I think two things.
People told me I didn't need it when I got it. And I was like, stop saying that. It drove me crazy.
No, I'm going to say this. I have come to like my nose. There are still certain angles that I don't love my nose from, right? Like from the side or whatever, like, for sure. Like there's still pictures where I don't love it. There's a lot of times now I love it. Like I do love it in certain things. I feel like it's a defining factor of my face though. And that's why I've come to love it. I think sometimes people's noses aren't like pinnacle to their face really. Like sure. It's in the middle of your face. But to me, this is like, it reminds me of like my mom and dad, my heritage and like being Lebanese. I just feel like if I had a different nose, it wouldn't be me anymore. And so I have had the thought and then just sort of like pushed through it. And I've learned to like it over time. I was never going to learn to like my saggy boobs. I just wasn't. So for me, right. And like little makeup, like tips and tricks and things that like help me feel more confident with that. Now I really like it. most of the time. And so I think that there are things for me where it's like, this is something I can learn to love and have learned to love. And then there are some things that I just would never love and have no desire to learn to love.
And more power like to the people who don't feel any need to get plastic surgery and to live with saggy boobs or to live with, creepy skin here or there. And if that is you, I admire you. I wish I had that kind of just natural confidence. And
you're a perfectionist in general. Very Virgo. But like, yeah, this in no way is like,
but
do
if
not.
It can be fixed. Why not take advantage of it?
And I think too, it's like fixed, right? Is like a loaded word because yeah, beautiful before, beautiful after, like all those things. It's really just like, do what you want to do. Live and let live. Like that's sort of my motto always.
Or don't, but don't judge others if they do.
Yes, don't. You have every right to whatever you want to yourself, with yourself, your body. You have no right to judge someone else's like decisions based on that. I could see myself getting my eyes eventually because I've always had hooded eyes. So I feel like I might eventually. It's not that bad, right?
Not bad at all. It's 2 weeks. You don't even go under. It's 2 weeks of
I don't know recovery. If the not going under might freak me out more.
You get a value. You're so, it's fine. Okay. I'll hold your hand.
Okay, perfect. No, if I decide to go that route, we'll go down the journey together.
Sure.
But in general, it's like I'm a very live and let live person.
Same.
And I think it's cool too, because at the end of the day, when you can be open about certain things without that judgment, it doesn't like take away. Like if I'm happy to like tell somebody I have a boob job, I still love my boobs. Even when I disclose it, I'm still like so happy I did it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But again, everyone has different things. I want to talk about another hot topic.
What's that?
Weight loss trends.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's like certain diets, like I want to get into like people are really into carnivore right now. I don't really vibe with that. I know you don't vibe with that. So I want to talk about the science behind fruits and veggies and all the things as well. Because for those of you guys who don't know, I'm pretty sure most people listening to the podcast at this point know my dad passed away from colon cancer 6 years ago. So I since then have grown to pay a lot more attention to like what I'm putting on and in my body. Mm-hmm. And this is like a conversation surrounding that. That's like one of the, you know, like, huge reasons why you and I opened up a conversation mm-hmm. about all of this is like, I wanted you to like keep, get an eye on like the picture and what do I need to be eating and why should I not eat that? Or what should I eat and really where to focus in just so that those like one less thing to worry about.
Yeah.
But like, whether it's like diets or like diet culture or weight loss trends of like Ozempic and things like that, I want to talk about pros and cons and all
Let's
the things.
Do it. So I'm glad we're talking about this because now here's where I'm going to get kind of nerdy.
I love it when you get nerdy.
So the colon cancer rates are expected to double, especially in a young population less than 35 in the next 6 years by 2030, right? Which is terrible, but this is all related to lifestyle. And so that's the good news is we can reverse those trends. What we see in a large meta-analysis, I think it was published in 2015, don't quote me on that, was that red meat consumption, processed meats and refined sugars and grains.
And processed meat would be like sausages, salamis,
pepperoni,
lunch meat,
some hamburgers, depending on what kind of process they go through. Of course, if you are on a farm and
I didn't know that about hamburgers. I thought it was just like,
hamburger. Yeah, it depends on the processing that it goes through. But if you're like pressing your own meat into like a ground beef, then it's different than the straight process thing. So again, this comes down to sourcing, well sourcing, but salami, sausage, bologna, all the deli meats, pepperoni, bacon, hot dogs. So these are things, deli meat. I grew up on deli meat and white bread, which is a refined flour. And these things directly cause cancer. The World Health Organization named them as a group one carcinogen, processed meats. So staying
That's
away from
crazy.
Those is really important. And then obviously lowering your refined processed foods. We all know how bad.
Seed oils.
So let's talk about seed oils. There's two camps on the seed oil discussion. So there's one camp and it's clear that the people in the one camp are very carnivore based people. And then The others are very plant-based. I take a very middle line on seed oils. I don't have a lot of seed oils in my diet. It's just not something I have to worry about. But when you look at the science, so a large meta-analysis, again, the Cochrane Review, Hooper did this study that was a meta-analysis of a bunch of studies, actually, that showed when you look at saturated fat and replacing saturated fat with seed oils, you actually get a reduction in cardiovascular disease risk. Okay. That's not the end of the story though. So first of all, what you're doing is you're comparing a plant-based oil that has likely been processed and has gone through some modification to something that we already know in the cardiovascular world is bad for health, right? So saturated fat is directly linked to increased bad cholesterol, which is not a really a good term to
There's
use.
There's good saturated fat though, like avocado, right?
So that's not saturated. Oh. Those are MUFAs.
Okay. What's that?
So monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. And so when you talk about seed oils, they are polyunsaturated fatty acids, particularly linoleic acid. And so we're looking at this kind of omega-6 polyunsaturated.
I'm nodding like I understand.
Yeah. So let's just get down to like the point. So we're
English, Brooke.
Sorry. This is my nerd coming out.
No, okay. I love your nerd. Just break it down so I can understand.
Okay. So seed oils are high in linoleic acid. It's not a saturated fat. It's an unsaturated fat. But there are a lot of people who believe that linoleic acid is not good for your cardiovascular health. The thought or the theory or the mechanism for that is that it may oxidize LDL cholesterol and make it more harmful to your cardiovascular health. Okay. And the reason cardiovascular health is so important is because it's the number one cause of death in men worldwide. Okay. So when we talk about that, it's important. You can distinguish one mechanism, but what really happens when you're in dietary studies is the foods you're eating are going to react very differently in the body and have a lot of complex mechanisms. And so to point to like take one individual mechanism and say that's going to cause the problem isn't really the way you do science. You have to look at the health outcomes in a big, you know, either prospective cohort, which is like a lot of people in doing a food frequency questionnaire, or more beneficial is to randomize them to two groups and say, did this intervention help or was this control better? And so that's what they did in some of these studies. And so what we see in the meta-analysis, which is just it's a fancy term for saying we took a whole bunch of studies and we like put them all together to bring more power to what we're saying. They said, okay, there's actually might be a small benefit to cardiovascular health if you're comparing it to something we already know is bad for cardiovascular health. Does that make sense? So if we're thinking about whether or not to eat seed oils, why are we comparing it to something we already know is bad? So that's my first thing. But that's what kind of the plant-based world is going to, and I'm plant-based. So, I mean, I'm all about this thought process in general, but I'm not going to choose to eat something based on comparing it to something that is harmful.
Right.
Now, if you're going to substitute it.
It's not like bad or worse. It's like,
right.
Do we or don't we?
Do we or don't we? Compared to what? Yes, I don't eat a lot of saturated fat. So I'm not going to have seed oils. I'm not going to start implementing seed oils just because it's better than saturated fat. One thing that people who really believe seed oils are bad will say is that in some of these studies, the secondary things that were studied, like cancer rates and total mortality, went up when you had seed oils. So seed oils go through, similar to processed meats, go through heating and chemical changes. Okay. So that could make them potentially toxic or harmful to the body.
Avocado oil is okay.
Avocado oil and extra olive virgin oil. Olive oil are fine. So stick to those and you don't have to have a problem. I think where we all can agree,
they're in everything though. Like if you turn over primarily processed, but even things like nuts, like you go and you buy like a can of nuts,
sunflower oil. That's like, the problem. You just have to be really conscientious. You can get peanut butter that has no seed oils in it.
It's just crazy though, because it's in things you wouldn't think it's in. It's like you turn over your bag of like Lay's salt and vinegar and like there's seed oil, duh.
Yeah.
But like it's not, it's in things that you wouldn't realize it's in. Like I went and I was like, oh, I'm going to get these like little packs of toasted edamame because that's going to be something crispy, crunchy, better than a chip, seed oils. Like It's in so many things. I guess I just didn't realize that it was in. That's all I'm saying.
And if you want
salad dressing, like yeah. what the fuck?
If you want to enjoy those things and you know there's no other alternative to have them, I think we can all agree, have them very minimal. They mm-hmm. should be less than 5% of your daily caloric intake.
I want to talk about this. I just got excited because you said something the other day when we were talking about how people say like on occasion, or what was the term we were saying? When it was like, it's sort of like splurge and occasionally eat this or do this or whatever. But people think on occasions like other day.
I hate the word in moderation.
In moderation. That's what
it's terrible. People don't understand moderation.
Because moderation, I think I'll be like, oh, I have cookies in moderation. That's like every 2 days. But not really moderation. That's like a routine, you know?
That is a routine. I'm glad you understand that.
Self-aware. We talked about this. I am nothing if not self-aware. I know my flaws.
When we look at the healthiest populations in the world, so a great book is The Blue Zones. Dan Buehner does a great job. He goes out to all of these populations in the world that are the highest population of centenarians, or people who live to be 100 or older, and figures out what they do.
People that end up on the Smucker's jar.
What?
The Smucker's jar. You've never seen that?
I'm sure they have nothing to do with Smucker's. On the jelly jar? Okay.
No, it was a joke. It was like, you have to be 100 and they put you on the Smucker's jar. Is that what it's called? The jelly jar. Kirsten is nodding. She knows what I'm talking about.
Okay, great.
When you're 100 years or older, they'll put you on the Smucker's jar.
But I'm pretty sure that they don't eat Smuckers what they eat is very, first of all, which I know you want to talk about, is very cultural. And
yeah, I do.
It's very natural to their own environment. And then it's mostly plant-based, and they do have meat, but it's very rare. Like maybe once a month, maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And for them, and I say this hesitantly because each different culture has a little bit different take on it.
We talked about this the other day.
But it's more of a ritual thing, and it's very spiritual and a lot of... when you sacrifice it, it's about like being grateful for the sacrifice of the animal.
Consuming all of the parts, et cetera.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. Stuff like that.
I feel best in more, like obviously I'm 75% Lebanese. I feel best in a Mediterranean.
Which is great. And I love that your body knows that, and that is your foundation. And I agree that people will feel best on the diet culturally meant for them. But of course, DNAs mix over time. Yes. And it's not that straightforward.
No, but we did talk about that, which I think is really interesting because I don't think people have enough conversation surrounding that. It's do this, do that, cut, don't eat meat, eat only meat and cheese, don't eat carbs. It's like,
and it's really hard to parcel out what would be your native diet.
I will say though, like do what works for you in general. For me, this is like going to be TMI. But when we start talking about things I should and shouldn't and could, like whatever frequency for like the cancers in my family and all the things, we're like up the fruits, up the veggies. There's so many other places that there are fiber. There's so many other places that there's protein, all that kind of stuff that you taught me on the whiteboard.
Yeah, the whiteboard.
The whiteboard.
Famous whiteboard. Somebody today said that whiteboard is magic.
No, it really is. You break it down quite well on the whiteboard. I gotta let you know. But for me, TMI, I'm so much more regular now.
You're welcome.
I was not, y'all don't even want to know. Like the days between.
You should have really before, nice, healthy poops.
But, yeah, but the days before when I was like trying to like eat tons of protein and eat cheese and like bleak. Mm-hmm. And now,
very constipated.
Consistent.
So what I truly believe in, regardless of where you're from or what your DNA is, there is benefit to having a variety of prebiotic foods, plant foods. All plant foods have prebiotic fiber. The definition of prebiotic fiber is that it has to bypass the upper GI tract, the pancreatic enzymes, the gallbladder, the gastric juices, get all the way through the small intestine, make it to the colon where it feeds good gut bacteria. So it's a prebiotic. And then if you're having the actual species, that would be called a probiotic. And then the last part of the definition of a prebiotic is that it causes the secretion of a postbiotic, which is the short chain fatty acid. Those short chain fatty acids are magical little things for your health. They decrease inflammation. They control your cholesterol. They allow your body to reduce they allow your body not to react to basically a foreign substance. So if you're eating a lot of processed foods that gets into your circulation in the upper GI tract, you're going to have all sorts of inflammation. Your immune system is going to come and attack that insult and figure out what to do with that. And if you keep giving yourself insult after insult, your body remains inflamed all the time. And that's how disease starts. Whether it attacks your kidneys or your liver or your joints or your head, you know, when you have red flags, when you have a headache or when you have joint pains or when you have GI upset, or I mean, that could be a little bit, that could just be gas, but these are red flags.
PSA.
Yeah. These are just red flags to say something's going on. Your body is inflamed. There's a problem here. We've sent out the infiltrate to figure it out. Maybe you should take note of what you're putting in your body.
Yeah, and absolutely. So
that's why a variety of plant foods is really important, because every different plant is going to have a different prebiotic that's going to feed a different
good gut bacteria. Yeah. Good gut bacteria.
And
okay.
Then you're going to be regular. You're going to poop like a dream.
No, seriously. Like, it really is a game changer.
See, you just gave me that. And then I'm like, I'm being too nerdy.
No, I understood it. That was like, yes, doctor confirmation. Other thing that I feel like is always a buzzy topic, weight loss things. Like, I don't know if there are pills, but there are shots. There are things
pills.
People. Oh, is it the same?
Yeah. You can take oral form of Ozempic.
Okay.
It's not
pros, cons. Pick. Who's it for? Who's it not for? Mm-hmm. Long, like, they don't know long term, really, right? Or do they?
We really don't know in terms of in healthy. Well, when I say healthy, and use that term lightly, undiagnosed people, we don't know. We don't know. We have a little more data. So the first GLP-1 agonist was in 2005.
What's a GLP-1 agonist?
That's what Ozempic is.
Oh.
That's the mechanism of action. Okay. Byetta was the first one. And the reason it was made was because it attaches to the pancreatic islet cells in the pancreas too. That was a little redundant. The reason it was made was to cause secretion of insulin from the pancreas for diabetics.
Yes.
And they just noticed that these people on GLP-1s were losing quite a bit of weight, which is great for diabetes. Is part of what we would call a metabolic syndrome. And it often, not always, but it often accompanies things like obesity and heart disease. And when you have obesity, that in of itself predisposes you to other very bad chronic diseases and cancers. So having a good composition of body fat and muscle is important. And if you have too much adipose tissue, they secrete things like adipokines, which are inflammatory cytokines that send dysfunctional signals. It's just, it's a hyperinflamed state, and it should be taken care of. And whether you're doing that on your own through lifestyle, kudos, because it's very difficult. Your body has its own biologic mechanisms to slow down your basal metabolic rate and to slow down your thyroid production and to increase your hunger once you get past a certain percentage of body loss, because it feels like it's starving. And, you know, we're very primal and primitive. We want to hold on to body and fuel sources in case there is a famine. So it's very hard. It's very hard, whether you do that with medicine. So more than just Ozempic, the phentermine was on the market way before, a long time ago. I don't know the date of that. That's a stimulant medication. It has, you know, some cardiac side effects, things like that. It does help with weight loss. It's not quite as, I would say, based on what we see in people's laboratory values and how Ozempic lowers chemoattractants. And
what's that?
It's a inflammatory cytokine. Okay. So it lowers inflammation. How Ozempic helps with maintaining even blood sugar. So that's going to lower advanced glycated end products, which is great for longevity and aging. It helps to attenuate an mTOR pathway, which is a part of protein metabolism. So lowering that helps with longevity. So phentermine was helping people lose weight a long time ago. Fen-phen was what it used to be called. Now, that's not as mainstream. It can be used in somebody who has a lot of weight to lose. And if they want to, they ramp up on a progressive dosing of Ozempic or Mounjaro, you're going to lose a lot of weight, even given all the side effects. If it's really done well and it's monitored well and regularly by a provider who knows what they're doing and knows what to look for your side effects, it can be a very beneficial drug for weight loss and to promote health.
And people who necessarily aren't necessarily, obviously people who are very obese, but not necessarily even.
Right.
And that's,
you'd be surprised.
People do. A lot of other people take it who aren't obese or didn't start out obese.
Exactly. Okay. But you'd be surprised, people walking down the hall, down the street, their cardiovascular risk can be high, even if to you, they don't look like they're morbidly obese or overweight or any of that. I think we've gotten so used to what like a normal body habitus looks like. And I think we've gotten so used to overweight looking like a normal body habitus. So, and then obviously weight is very much associated with vanity in our society. So we're quick to judge whether somebody gets on a medicine like this saying they didn't need it, when in reality, that's our judgment coming from our own perspective.
Totally.
When, you know, we could temper that judgment and let them do what's best for their health.
That makes sense. We were just talking off camera for a minute about, in general, like if you're going to take something like that, take judgment out altogether, whether you start out and you're obese or you don't look to the common person like you would be obese, but there could still be benefits for you. I'll let you speak obviously on this one because you are the doctor, not me, but overarching like statement, don't just like buy this online and take it. You need to be monitored by someone like Brooke or a professional who knows what they're doing. Can you speak more to that just from like a cautionary point? Because you've told people the benefits, but obviously there are a lot of like side effects and downsides. Yeah. And if you're not properly doing this, like it could be really detrimental and probably will be really detrimental for a lot of people.
Yes. And I think this is where we get into trouble with these sensationalized stories about somebody who, and of course this is tragic and all my compassion, but somebody who has died from a paralytic gut after taking Ozempic was probably, and I don't know this person, so I'm obviously assuming some things here, but may have been left to their own devices. And certainly in that setting, your risks are going to be higher. And if you are followed frequently, I will just tell you what we do in our office. So
this is not Advil is the point. Like you can't, you could, I guess, go buy it in theory. I don't know, but like, don't do it essentially. Like you need to be monitored and assessed to see if this is even beneficial, right? Because like there are people, I'm assuming that this would not be.
There are people that I've turned away that are too low body weight and it would put them in an increased risk of health.
Okay.
Problems if they were on it. Yes.
Sorry, continue.
It's not for everybody. When I see people weekly in my office, I'm obviously checking their weight. We don't want you to lose more than about 2 pounds per week. Then you're going to be losing too much muscle. And at the end of this, we want you to have a pretty good body composition. And I would even go so far as to say putting on muscle once you get to your goal weight is ideal. It's very hard to put muscle on while you're in a calorie deficit because your body naturally wants to take from all fuel sources. Weightlifting and focusing on protein. Now, there's caveats when I say that. So
you're not saying eat steak every meal.
Right. And the amount of protein that we're eating in society, in my opinion, is way, way, way too much. But having a good amount of protein and weightlifting will send signals to your body to maintain that fuel source and to preferentially take from fat. However, you're still going to get some protein loss in your muscle. And so being aware that you're not losing it too rapidly is the first thing. Secondly, making sure you're having regular bowel movements because it does slow down your gut motility. Paralysis is a risk factor. But if you're having a bowel movement, and this is one thing you can easily do if you're not being regularly followed, and this is not medical advice. I can't give medical advice just arbitrarily to a big population. But I would say if you haven't had a bowel movement for about 3 days, and you're about to give yourself another shot, wait. Give yourself a shot after you've had a good, satisfactory eliminating bowel movement.
Satisfactory. Take a book.
Yeah, take a book. No, and honestly, the best bowel movements take 30 seconds. They don't take long. They're just really complete. And you're not pinching and you're not waiting. So just a good, satisfactory bowel movement, and then you can take your next dose. That's really important.
But all in all, I would say like, with a large group of people, since like a good amount of people will be listening to this, like just don't do things unmonitored. I think that's like, if we can give that blanket statement, like,
don't do anything.
Don't do anything unmonitored. I just would never recommend that, you know, because at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, there are safer ways to do it. Just don't do it unmonitored. I feel like not worth the risk, especially since it has been studied long enough to like, know what that could look like. So I think all in all, if you feel like you could be a good candidate, go to someone that knows they're talking about, see if you are, and act accordingly, but don't just like decide to do it. Cause
that's probably better.
You don't want to go to the gym or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I know, but I just want to mention one of like pancreatitis, gallbladder, so all these things can be big surgical emergencies. So if you're not having a proper, it's not either take the medicine or have the proper lifestyle. It's have the proper lifestyle, use the medicine as a tool.
From my understanding of it too, it's like, if you're someone who needs to lose a lot of weight, it can be a great tool, but you have to implement healthy lifestyle as well to maintain that post, right?
Necessary.
Okay. I want to talk in general about I think that your whole life is a reflection of you in a really beautiful, like cohesive aesthetic way, whether it's like the friendships that you maintain or the way that your house looks or the way you host or the way that you dress or the way that you wear your hair, like everything fits into this like really cool, and you do it in a real way. I don't mean in like a weird like Stepford way, but like everything just is you. And I think it's a really, comes from like a really authentic place. And so my question is for people listening who want to maybe have like more of a sense of self or a sense of style or, and have that sense of style reflected in your home. I clean out my closet every like couple of weeks, honestly, at this point, just push things through. But I recently have realized like, okay, there's this section of things in my closet that I'm giving away, donating, whatever it may be, because I like them and I liked them when I bought them and I still like them, but I've never worn them and I'm never going to wear them because they don't feel me. Mm-hmm. We all know that feeling when you put an outfit on and you're like, you love it and you feel confident, you feel great, you feel pretty, you feel put together and you're like, oh, this is so me. And then we've all also had that feeling when you put an outfit on and maybe you really like it, but you're like, it's not me. I don't feel good in it. And I think that there's this like bifurcation between I like it, I appreciate it, and it's not me. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to buy it. I don't need it. Versus I really like it and it feels very me. And I want to incorporate this in to my life, whether it's, you know, the way that you do your makeup or the way that you dress or the things in your home, et cetera.
Right. I have in recent years been very intentional about all of those things. Even when I got dressed this morning, I was like, that doesn't look like me. Am I dressing for Courtney or am I dressing for me? And so I changed because I wanted to feel like me.
Totally.
And I have a few things that I really have honed in on my style. A few years ago, I must have heard it maybe on a podcast or who knows, Instagram. Somebody said, find a vision of you, whether it's a picture or a picture of somebody else you like, some picture of your past that you really felt like you were well-dressed, that you felt good about yourself, that like really exemplified who you are, like, who you want
you
to
love
be.
That. Like, yes,
yeah.
This
and
is
how
it.
You want to present yourself to people. Cause that's also important. And I did, I found a picture of me where I was at a golf tournament and I loved what I was wearing. It was all white. It was very tailored. And it was simple, like no pattern or anything. And I, in my mind now, when I buy things, I ask myself, does this go along with the vision of that girl that I want to portray? And that's who I want to be. That's how I want to portray myself to the world. And so my style has kind of been cultivated in the last few years. And I've been so happy about it because similarly, I have things in my office, in my closet with tags on it that I like, but I
but it's not you.
Never wear. It's
same.
Not,
same. Not or like genuine. I had like a whole like little section of things where it's like I saw it at the store and I was like, oh, I really like that. I think it's okay to like it on someone else or for someone else and recognize it and be like, oh, it's so cute. But like right. It doesn't feel like me because the truth is you don't reach for it when it doesn't feel like you. You end up wasting money and you don't feel good even in it when it doesn't feel like you, you know? So you recognize it on someone else and then it's like, eh. Like,
that's a part of growing up and having self-control. When you see something beautiful, recognize it as beautiful and then say, is it for me or not for me?
Totally. Whether it's a friendship or the way that you decorate your home or like even for me, it was like I was blonde for a hot minute. I hated being blonde.
Okay.
I think my friends who are blonde look absolutely stunning. It didn't feel like me. Mm-hmm. So it's less a reflection of the blonde and more a reflection of I'm not a blonde.
Right.
And like, that's okay to see and be like, oh my gosh, beautiful, like blonde, blue eyes, like stunning, not me. Embracing and leaning into like what feels like you will always, I think, sort of cultivate your best and most confident, the best and most confident version of yourself.
And it doesn't mean you still can't have fun and like try new things every once in a while.
But recognize, like, I do think that there's a certain level, like my mom is very much knows what is for her and what's not for her in a sense. Like, she'll get out of her comfort zone a little bit here and there, like to a degree, with her style and home and all this kind of stuff. And then there are a lot of things where she's like, no, thanks, not me.
Yeah. Even though they might be beautiful.
With full confidence. Love that for you. Uh-huh. Just not me.
Not me.
You know? And so I like that. So find pictures or whatever that reflect what you know that you do like and use that as like a starting point.
And for the home, I had to blend my vision with what my husband wanted. He likes very stark, modern, clean lines. Mm. I like more of a contemporary, but almost softer Scandinavian look. And so blending those two things. And every time I picked something for the house, I went back to the vision. I had to every time. I'm like, is this going to fit that overall vibe? Mm. And so everything in my house is very cohesive. I think there's one room where it's a hodgepodge of all our old furniture.
And I don't think I've seen that room. Does the door stay closed?
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think too, it's like, it's cool how that gets reflected in everything, but it is intentional, right? Because you're someone that I think from the outside in, you make it look easy.
It comes naturally because I'm a Virgo, but it's not always easy.
But it's curated. Uh-huh. There's a difference in like, it could be easy for you in the sense that you have the vision, mm-hmm. but it still takes curating.
100%.
You know what I mean? It's not just like willy-nilly, like
and
whatever.
I just did a photo shoot usually when I do photo shoots, I'm like, I don't even care. Like, let's just get some shots. And I never am that satisfied with everything that we do. But this time, I curated every pose. Mm-hmm. I knew what outfits I was going to wear. And I loved them all. And I think taking a little time on the forefront, you'll be a lot happier with your choices.
Yeah, spend your time doing it. Especially for home stuff too. My mom always says like, don't go and just buy everything from one place because it looks like you went and bought everything from one place rather than taking the time to curate. Yeah. You're good at patience. I struggle with this. I'm like, I want it and I want it yesterday. I want it to my house and I wanted it yesterday.
In terms of design stuff?
Everything. Okay. But yeah, but I think that you're good at like taking the time because your vision is so strong for things, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm really good at that certain times and then sometimes I struggle. Like I just got a piano for my house and I literally picked it out yesterday. It'll be there on Friday.
Great.
It's just how I roll.
It's beautiful though.
It's how I, thank you. It is pretty, right? It's just like my natural instinct is like now.
That also works for some people.
It does.
They just know what they like and they don't have to think about it.
I'm very definitive, but I've worked on that with home style and stuff over the years to say if I really like it and I cannot get it for 8 weeks, I have to wait 8 weeks. And that's hard with home stuff.
For you. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah. We grow and we evolve and thus is life. All right. Well, this has been so fun. I feel like I could see there being like a lot of good follow-up questions from this one. So let us know if you guys want a part two with Brooke. Tell us where we can find you.
I am on Instagram at Brookie Stubbs MD.
We'll put it in the description too, okay. But just
Brookie Stubbs MD and then rootedfemme.com. So it's put it in the show notes. It's rootedfemme.com is how you can find my practice here in Austin.
Amazing. Thank you for taking the time. I know you're a very busy woman.
Oh my God. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We'll have to do it again. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.